Today's program is brought to you by Physical Culture Collective. For more information, visit their website at physicalculturecollective.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Cynthia Cherish Malloran, Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you are listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. So before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, and love is spelled L-U-V, and hashtag using Primary Food or Heritage underscore Radio, or hashtag Rev Love. So welcome to the 21st episode. Wow, I'm almost done with the second season of Primary Food. That's a lot of episodes of me talking about things that nourish me and you, us. And what exactly is primary food? So I learned this really great concept in nutrition school at IIN, the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, that the food you eat, you know, the stuff we put in our mouths and chew and enjoy, we consider that to be secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes us before we sit down and eat. And that's stuff like enjoying music, reading a great book, hanging out with your friends, walking your dog and taking your time, cooking food, having a great job, creative expression, playing games, exercise, all that good stuff. And I'm so glad that I learned this concept because it was the high quality primary food that I kept in my life while going through chemotherapy last year that kept me happy and healing my cancer. So if you're listening, you can call in live at 718-497-2128. I'm going to repeat that again because I'm sure you didn't have a pencil in your hands. 718-497-2128. Any questions and comments, please do call. So I'm continuing the topic of music as nutrition, and today I have another musical guest. Maybe we need a little intro music.
How about you?
Yeah, fantastic. Sitting next to me is Isaac Raz.
Hi.
Composer, musician, singer, president, and founder of Whole Music, LLC in New York.
That's right.
So music, Isaac, is not a hobby.
No.
It's a form of nutrition. You and I have talked about this. I'd love to hear and share with everyone your idea and your thoughts about the importance of music and nourishment in our lives.
Well, you know, it seems to me that, and it's been known basically forever, that we humans, you know, probably the first thing we did was knock two stones together and repeated it a couple of times, and it was like, yeah, that sounds good, do some more of that. It seems like music is just ingrained in our very existence, and so it's essential. It's as essential as food, nutrition, and the concept of the primary food is brilliant, because it's true. You are who you are first, and then you have to feed that organism with calories, but you still are what you are, and music is part of what you are. It's part of the baseline where we start from.
I can say that for sure. If I have not enough music in my life, I feel starved.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that says a lot about it being nourishing.
You probably, while we were sitting here chit-chatting before the show, I couldn't stop playing the keyboard. Yeah. And it was partly to calm my nerves, and it was partly to just warm up and figure out what I wanted to do. But this is a theme, you know. I just can't stop doing it. It's just, if I do, it doesn't feel right. Unless I'm tired and I need to rest, you know, we all do. But, you know, it's that constant urge to do it.
So music for you is equally as important as really good secondary food, like a good dinner. What is the musical equivalent of a really great dinner?
Well, something that it's the parallels are amazing now that I'm just thinking about it. What's great food? It's simple, high quality, fresh ingredients, simply prepared. You don't do too much to it, right? You don't overcook it.
Handmade. Yeah.
And the key being simple, right? At the very core of all the best food is simplicity.
Mm.
And I think the same is true for music. You know, even the most sophisticated and sort of complex sounding music, really at its core, is based on really simple principles, and they're embellished a certain way. And it's that simplicity in the pattern that just grabs us and makes us really, you know, say, what was that? And we want more of it.
As you're saying that, I think I'm making the connection as to why music is as nourishing as eating a meal. It's because it taps into our senses.
Yes.
Just as a meal would.
Oh, yeah.
Your sight, your taste.
That's right. You know, when you're cooking, you know, you're multitasking, you're smelling what's coming on, and you can tell by the smell if it's done or not, and you can tell what you want to add to it, and there's also the tactile. You're touching the food, you're trying to see how done it is. There's taste, there's also memories and feelings. You know, I used to remember when my grandmother used to make these vegetable patties, blah blah blah, you know. I can't get her rest. You know, this all these different multi-layered things happening simultaneously. That's exactly the case when you're playing an instrument or singing a song. You've got the content of the song. You've got the technique of it, because of course also in cooking, you know, there's technique. You got to chop things. You got to saute things, right?
Right.
In music, there's a certain way of doing a certain scale. There's a certain way of doing and then hopefully you get that so ingrained that you don't have to think about it anymore. And so now you're thinking about higher level things, like, you know, this chord sounds purple. You know, I don't know why it sounds purple, but maybe to somebody else it sounds, you know, I don't know, beige. But that's it. We all experience our own experience with it, you know, and it does, it connects all these different senses.
Just like food. And as I think about food and music being so different yet kind of the same, you know, I think about how both involve instruments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Both are all about timing.
Right. Oh, yeah, timing. Ask me, what's the most important?
Okay, I'm going to ask you. What's the most important thing about music?
Timing.
And the same with prepping food. I mean, you can have the same ingredients. Cook it too long, too short.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same thing, you know?
That's right. And it transforms. So every level you can think of, practically, there are so many parallels. And actually, when I teach, I have a studio that I help songwriters realize their songs into actual recordings. Many of them aren't really trained musicians. They just have really great ideas and they don't know what to do with them. And part of my job in that case is to sort of try to get inside their head and see what their intention was. And so it's about, and we were talking about timing. Remind me what we were talking about, because I lost
timing.
My train of thought.
Timing.
And the different associations, right. And so I'm trying to help them realize communicating. No, it was something else. It was something. We'll come back to it.
Yeah, we'll come back
to it. But it really does. Teaching. That's right. Explaining to it. So I explain things to my clients and to my students in terms of food, in terms of cooking. For example, putting together a great track is like putting together a great meal. You have to balance many different elements. I'm so glad I remember this. you're putting together some, you know, all these different elements, and you have to balance them very carefully. And there's no one right way of doing it. Too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some play in there. And then when they hear this, they sort of become a little bit less sort of, you know, fearful of the unknown, whatever you want to call it. And then they get into it because it's something that obviously we all eat. So now you know, okay, so this process of putting it together, it's really the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I bet in the method that you teach your music students and whatever terminology you use, I bet that can be overlaid onto a culinary teacher.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it. Because as you were speaking, it sounded like, well, you could be saying this in the kitchen to cooking students as well.
Yeah. It's so funny how similar it is. And I guess we're going to be talking also about movement and other things.
We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff.
So and that all has to, it all falls right into the same category.
So this conversation of food pairing and music. So we'll talk about, well, what's your secondary food like? How do you eat? And how do you enjoy your food?
Well, I've recently gone on a completely plant-based diet. So I guess I'm a vegan. Even though I'm still kind of wrestling with my own self-identity because I was like the biggest meat eater. And now all of a sudden it's like, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. But now I have to sort of revamp my life around it. And it's been great. I mean, I've had so much energy but I also have had to make certain modifications in how I prepare my food. And if you are anywhere outside of the East Village or Bushwick, or, you know, you're on your own if you're on unless you just want to like survive on French fries, you know, which is probably not the best thing. I mean, it tastes yummy. All you French fries fans, I'm with you. But you can't survive on that alone. So you have to be real disciplined and take your own food and get it done. And another thing about it is I found a lot of diversity I'm trying to find a lot of diversity in what I make, which is a challenge because I'm the kind of guy that, you know, I would go to the Chinese restaurant, I'd order the same thing. Like they'd know me. Oh yeah, mm-hmm, you're the mm-hmm. General Tso's chicken and the, yeah, I know you. Yeah. Okay. You know, and, or now it's General Tso's tofu, you know, but it's the same. I want the comfort in the familiar. And so there's this push and pull between, I want to find all these new possibilities that I should have because obviously variety and diversity in your diet is actually a good thing. It's healthy, different kinds of grains and vegetables and all that. Balancing that with my desire to just have the same thing, you know, what I want. So it's been an interesting journey of late.
But you feel better.
Oh, I feel a million times better.
What prompted you to change the way you eat? Was it health reasons? Or?
Well, it was a combination of factors. You know, I don't know what eventually tipped the balance for me. Maybe it was, I remember when it happened. I remember I was actually eating a huge steak.
Oh, and, that steak must have been bad.
And it was, it was great. And it was, and I made it and it was perfect. I mean,
you made it.
It was perfect. Wow. But then I was like, I started to really think about it and I was like, you know what? It stopped being appealing, even though it was very tasty. It stopped being appealing for a lot of different reasons.
What were you picturing in that moment?
Well, the whole, just everything surrounding it, never mind the death of the animal. Okay. There's that, but there's the abuse that happens from the industrialized farming. They don't only abuse the animals, they abuse the people that work for them, they abuse the political system, they abuse the environment. And it just got to a point where I said, I just don't want to be a part of this anymore. And yes, it does involve a personal sacrifice. But now, you know, I go up to, I teach a lot in Westchester County, and there's a really cute little petting zoo up there called Muscoot Farm, you know, and they got little cows and little sheep. And I look at the cow and I say, hey, we're cool. All right. And, you know, it never dawned on me how much significance that actually does have, you know?
And how old were you when you had this mind shift?
47. I regret to say that I'm now 48, but that was...
Now 48. Yeah.
Almost going. I was coming on a year now. I guess August will be a year.
And what are the big changes in your energy? And
oh my gosh, I have it for one.
And your creativity? Has it affected your creativity?
It's affected every level of my life in a positive way. That's not to say that I don't struggle with it. That's not to say that I don't sometimes, especially, you know, when we're out, you know, my girlfriend and I were like, they're barbecuing, they're you know, and we're subsisting on whatever we're allowed to have within that narrow bandwidth when you go out. And then I, you know, my inner child starts to throw a temper tantrum, but mm-hmm. then I eat something and I feel better and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm still happy I'm doing this.
And so now you're preparing food at home that's more plant-based.
It's 100% plant-based.
100%.
I have no animal products in my diet that I know of.
Do you listen to music when you prep your food and when you eat food at home? Being so musical.
You know, that's a really good question. I used to, but now I don't. I had to do it in my head.
Oh, it's in your head.
Yeah. I'm humming or I'm going over something. And I would actually, what happens, it's interesting you should bring this up because, you know, I live in a, you know, studio apartment in New York City and it's not very large. And so the kitchen is over here and the piano's over there.
Uh-huh.
And I can't tell you how many things I have burned because I put them on and then I was like, okay, let's go. And, you know, no, maybe it was. And the next thing you know, that sense of smell comes in and says,
you're burning something.
Yeah. Or, you know, my pasta has become porridge. I was like, okay, this is not al dente anymore.
So have you put your piano out of the kitchen room?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's right there. You can't escape it. And I have this little keyboard on the next corner. And then I have a little tiny keyboard next to my computer on the dining table. And it's you can't escape it.
I like what you said, that the music has been in your head. And I guess I'm realizing now that's kind of what I had been doing. But over the past couple of days, I did a test
mm-hmm.
in preparation for this episode.
Okay.
I mean, it's summer now, right? And in the summer, I basically start my day with a salad. I know it's really super counter breakfast picture, you know, because I grew up with pancakes.
But interestingly, you know, other cultures, you know, my parents come from Israel. Salad's part of breakfast over there.
What kind of salad?
It's just Israeli salad. It's tomatoes and cucumbers and maybe onions for breakfast.
Onions for breakfast. Yeah, cool. Right. So yeah. I was thinking like, you know, this is not too strange then. Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah.
I do this salad in the morning and it's a big salad, like a huge bowl. And that's basically, I tell myself that's like my salad for the day. And that could be a whole thing of romaine, you know, like a big thing of it. So, you know, like, what do I put in it? I'll put an apple in it. Sometimes I'll put a nectarine in it. I'll throw some beans in it. Maybe a little bit of onion.
Wait, I got to write this down.
Yeah, write it down, okay? So I start my day with that. And it was in the beginning, like, you know, a few years ago when I was shifting what, quote, breakfast looked like, that was really challenging.
Right, yeah.
Super challenging because I felt like I was abandoning something. Instead of gaining something. So eventually that shifted and I'm very okay with it because I can't do the pancake. I mean, I don't, you know, do the egg or bacon thing. But that I realized over the years how draining that was for my energy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Even last year, I would like, quote unquote, treat myself. This is back when I would do that. And my friend would be, let's go grab brunch. And I'm like, all right. And I'd get the hungry hunter, lumberjack, you know.
The beast man brunch.
You know, a stack of, and then I would ask for all the butter they have, and I would wang like butter between each one on both sides, because who wants a dry pan? You want the butter in there? And then about an hour and a half later, that's my day. I'm done. I'm like, I have to sleep it off for about, you know, 18 hours.
Yeah, but you're not done. You do eat later on top of that, right? I mean...
Yeah, if I can move. But I said to myself, I'm never going to do this on a day where I actually have to do something.
Exactly. Because you shut down, you know, completely shut down. Now, do you remember a place in the East Village, I think it was, called Royal Canadian Pancake House?
No.
Okay. So this place, and it's closed down maybe 15 years by now. They used to serve a stack of pancakes that, no joke, was at least the size of my head. And people would order that left and right.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say that everyone would, you know, actually finish it, but there were people who finished it.
Yeah.
Now, that was what, that kind of porn was like, it's what I grew up with. My body suffered so much.
You might as well just, like, inject, I don't know,
pancake syrup
into your veins. Right. It's like,
you know, so life 2.0, actually by now it's like life 3.0. So I start my day with this big salad.
Yeah.
And I make a big one because, you know, I am an overeater. I love to indulge in what I'm eating. So I figure, well, hey, how bad could it be if I'm eating too much of a salad, right? So I start my day basically with a huge pillow of roughage in my gut, right? And I feel really good about that.
Yeah, and it stays with you, and you have a lot of, and it gives you energy, and
I dump olive oil on it and everything.
Yeah,
and I tell myself, okay, you had that, and you could eat, quote, whatever you want for the rest of the day, end quote. And I end up not eating much because I'm so full of fiber and nutrients, right? And we know that if we eat really nutrient dense foods, the body doesn't like clamor for much more.
No, it's cool. Yeah,
but unlike, you know, when I've eaten bags and bags of popcorn. And hey, eating bowls and bowls of rice because there isn't too much nutrition in it. So I did this test the other day. I played classical music from my Pandora station while prepping this breakfast salad. Mm-hmm. And this piano guy's station, like that. Not almost even slower than that. And I found myself preparing it so slowly and beautifully.
Yeah. It affects what you do, though.
Yeah. I felt really nice. And I sat at my window and ate it. And I found myself chewing to it. And I said, yeah, this is like every restaurant that had beautiful music playing where I felt like, oh, yeah, I'll just order the next thing and the next thing. This is such a nice environment.
Mm-hmm.
So today I did something different. I played instead of the piano guy's station, I played, I forget exactly what the station was called, but it started with Rammstein, which is some kind of like, you know, death metal kind of heavy kind of stuff. And I said, let me prepare.
Let's see what comes out with this
salad to this kind of music. And just hearing the first few bars of it, I was not wanting to eat immediately.
Right.
Strangely, I was cutting the food and I felt like everything seemed salty. I didn't taste it yet.
Yeah.
And I just felt like this isn't going to be right.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
Here's a thought that was so interesting as I was preparing. I felt like the knife was sharper, but it wasn't. I didn't sharpen it. But I felt like to this death metal music that...
So it adjusted your perceptions on every level, every sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's very interesting because just this morning I was having a
conversation. I couldn't eat it, by the way. Like it took me an hour and a half to eat breakfast.
Yeah, well, because... I was just having a conversation this morning with my girlfriend, and Annie, if you're listening, shout out.
Yo.
And she was reading an article in the New Yorker about the use of music in what they call PSYOPs, psychological operations.
Like military?
Military.
Hmm.
Not just military, also commercial. There's a company named Muzak that... made gajote loads of money. That's a new word. It's a lot.
Gajote loads?
Gajote loads.
Like
gajillions of boatloads of money. Making an environment that makes you browse around more and buy more stuff.
Sure.
By removing certain elements of the music that produce the kinds of responses that you're talking about with your death metal salad.
Yeah.
And then you have... Then you have this article mentioned 7-Eleven owners that would pipe classical music and easy listening into the parking lots to get rid of the kids that are hanging out there. In other words, it has the opposite effect. They're hanging out and they're loitering. He doesn't want them there anymore, so he puts on like You know, and then they're out of there.
No, you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because years ago I went into the new, at the time, Sony store.
Yeah.
And there were these little boom boxes on display. And this is a true story. Someone's probably going to come after me for saying this, because this is definitely like a secret tactic. Mm-hmm. I opened the boom boxes and they were kind of glued or taped shut. But I was like, why is this one like glued shut? And I forced it open. Inside the CD player was a corporate disc that says, if you play music, they will buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I stood there, and I didn't have a digital camera at the time, because that's how long ago it was. It's like, oh, I'm going to curse for a sec. Motherfuckers. It was like, they're tricking us with music. Yeah. But, you know, it's like you're saying, music has such a you know, it has a grasp. It yeah. grips us.
Yeah. Well, part of this article was talking about in Iraq, they would use music to torture prisoners. They would give them rap, death metal, and children's songs at the highest possible volume.
That's
with strobe
horrible.
Lights. Yeah, and it would induce like I mean, it would drive them literally crazy.
Now, but that's very interesting, because I kind of like that environment, so mm-hmm. that wouldn't be torture to me.
I'm like, oh my gosh,
you know, though,
like,
you know.
Children's music. I mean, it's wow. funny. Like, even it depends on the situation. The connotation can change on a dime. You know,
could
for
you
anything.
Eat food to children's music, or do you think that would just irritate you and you couldn't eat? Like, what kind of music can you eat to?
I hate to say this, being a teacher of a music teacher of children, but it would really irritate me.
So, if right now I'm eating a plate of pasta, what yeah. music do you recommend goes with my pasta?
You know, I think that it's what you like, because, you know, it's like what goes on your pasta, you know, I mean, and it's what you feel like in the moment. Part of this article was also talking about that, you know, music therapy is effective. You know, you don't use the same song for everybody. You know, if a person's into heavy metal, you know, you're not going to play the Captain and Tennille, you know, mm-hmm. for their therapy. It's not going to work. They need the music that they identify with. And I think that the same is true, that if you're creating your overall sort of gestalt experience around your meal, mm-hmm. and you're listening to and or, you know, alternating going to the piano and burning your food like I am, that you do what's in your head and what you want to engage with at any given moment. And if you have eclectic tastes, you know, maybe that death metal is effective for that salad, given your mood that day. And you're like, man, I just need to
murder this salad.
Right. Oh, that felt good. You know, I mean, it depends on the moment. It depends on the person.
And you're right, because, you know, in creating that particular mood, like, let's say, for example, at 8 o'clock, I'm DJing at The Roost mm-hmm. on Avenue B, which, you know, where it mm-hmm. is, 222 Avenue B. I'm DJing a set of Brooklyn hip hop. Bronx
hip hop.
Hip hop.
Yeah.
For Bronx Brewery.
Yeah.
So we're creating that mood that'll get people in the right mindset to be loving what they're drinking, create that family kind of feeling, and buying more beer. See?
Yeah.
If you play beer music, they'll buy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you always see how. And we don't even, it's so ubiquitous, we don't even talk about it anymore. And in fact, you know, people look at music as like it's just this extra thing that we don't
yeah,
need.
It's
and yet,
not.
And yet, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah.
It's everywhere. You go to a baseball game here.
Yeah.
And I do that when I'm practicing my scales.
It's part of our life. Soundtrack experience.
It's
everything.
Everywhere, and it's so ubiquitous you don't even notice it's there.
There are some restaurants that I've been to that have actually, and you know, Starbucks has a music sector to it. They
yeah.
put their music out in the
there
front.
There are like a whole label.
Yeah, and there are restaurants I've been that I can't name. There's so many that have been mostly on the West Coast, where on the table I'd see a track list of what they're playing, because mm-hmm. they're pairing the music
well,
with the food as well.
They're super smart, which is how they became, like, I think the like the largest company in the universe, because they know how to sell stuff, and they realized what was going on in the record business with this whole Napster revolution and the streaming and the loss of and the end of physical media, CDs. You know, people our age do CDs. Kids nowadays, they don't know what CD. What is this thing? This round.
What is a shiny thing?
If I could put my drink on it, I can. You know, and they realize, well, wait a minute. Okay, so who's our audience? Okay, and they're the ones that are going to actually buy CDs. And you know what? They're more likely to buy a CD if they heard it. Okay, mm-hmm. And look, we have a cafe. Let's put it on. And by the way, you like that? It's right here next to.
Oh, yeah, why don't you buy it?
Next to the mandolin. There's mandolin. There's a mandolin, and then a man with a violin. And I'm sorry.
No, but you make a good point. That
they know how to sell it. Yeah. And it's actually kind of part of this new model of distributing music, you know, which nobody knows what it's going to be yet. I mean, music, the whole music business is like, what's happening to us?
I have no idea.
We're melting.
I do know. We'll take a little break and we'll come back. We're going to talk more about improvising.
Yeah.
Music and cooking.
I love
and the
that.
Elements that go into music and see how similar it is to preparing food.
Awesome.
Hey, this is Gavin Van Vlack from Physical Culture Collective, Bushwick, Brooklyn. You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Gavin Van Vlack and Jenny Livingston at Physical Culture Collective bring you an alternative gym experience right in Bushwick.
It's fun to move around, and to move around in a way that you wouldn't normally get a chance to do. So, like, a lot of what we do here is you know, on the ground or standing, you're not, you know, you're using equipment, but you're not using machines.
I grew up in very alternative cultures. I grew up in the punk rock and hardcore scene. Muay Thai was something that very much resonated to me. And it was like, yeah, this is something that I can get around. This is a sport that's for me.
Learn more about classes and membership options at physicalculturecollective.com or visit them at 857 Broadway in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
And we're back with Isaac Raz, and we're talking about music. I think you might have a song you want to play for us.
Well, I guess I do. This is just a pretty little love song, and it's called Then You Walked In.
Oh.
Nothing was wrong. Nothing was right. Halfway in darkness, halfway in light. Same old routine, caught in between. Then the door opens and I'm waiting for my heart to stop beating. Sun on my face, real life turned upside down, spinning around. Then you walked in, let it be.
was good digesting music for Cynthia. That was beautiful. So that's a piece that you wrote.
Yeah.
It's an original piece.
I wrote it with a collaborator of mine, Juliet Green, who lives out in California.
That is really beautiful.
Yeah.
What are the ingredients that go into making music?
What are the ingredients that go into making music?
The elements.
Arlo Guthrie came and gave a talk to a bunch of Berklee students, one of which was me, and he said, you know, writing a song's not so much you wrote it, but one flew by and you had a pen handy. So there's that element, the fact that it was always there. My teacher likes to say that, you know, electricity was there before we discovered it. We just found ways of getting to it. And so writing a piece of music is a little bit like that. It just is there. And you're trying to find your way to it. How do you find your way to it? Well, you have tools. You have technique. You have the instrument or instruments that you play. You have your life experience and your memories and your emotions. You have your intellectual, conceptual knowledge of the musical language, of the language, the verbal language in which you're writing. So I'd say those would be the basic elements. And then there's that... you know, since we're on the radio, I have to give a nod to Peter Schickele, who used to close his show by saying, it don't mean a thing unless it has that certain je ne sais quoi. I guess that would be the other element.
The undefined, the indefinable thing. I mean, for me, obviously, you know, and I say it to everyone, music is nourishing for me.
Yes.
It's energizing, and we all have been to that, you know, have had that evening or that night at a club, and we haven't eaten, but somehow we're full of energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, pumping our fists or dancing or whatever you do, and somehow nourished.
Well, it creates a state of flow that really X's out everything else. I can't tell you how many times, like, I get into something and I don't know how much time has passed, or I don't even realize somebody's trying to get my attention. I'm so into it.
Like hours can go.
Whether it's hours or minutes, where your immersion in that moment. And of course, that's the goal. That's what you're trying to get to is to attain that perfection of being in the moment. And my teacher does that. Like, you could be like, hey. And he's figuring something out, and there's nothing else. He could be sitting on a burning log and not know it.
I am exactly like that when I'm prepping food.
Yeah.
When I'm, quote, improvising
in
my
focus.
Food,
yeah.
I am so focused.
Because you're planning what's coming up ahead.
Yeah.
And how long is it? Okay, so while that's getting ready, I can do this. And then you do that. Okay, so now I've got that started. What's my next thing? Okay, I guess I'll clean up a little. And then you're constantly planning ahead. While you're in the moment and you're trying not to cut yourself, you're trying not to burn yourself.
You know, and you make me raise this question, like, okay, so I could really be focused as I'm preparing the food. However, I'll rush through eating it, but I don't rush through listening to music.
Oh, wow. Rush through eating it.
Yeah.
I was watching a cooking show. I think it was an Italian food, and they were saying, you know, cook fast, eat slow.
I need to do a little bit more eat slow.
That would totally stuck with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
We need more eat slow music.
My dad used to tell me I vacuum my food.
Yeah, and I'll spend a lot of time prepping, and I need to. I need more Isaac music in the background while I'm eating it.
That's right. Slow as you go. This is slow eating music. It's actually the same song. I need another song.
Now, creativity is an important form of primary food for myself and you and so many people. I mean, you can agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
How do you teach your students? And what ages are your students?
My students are literally from 5 to 55.
Oh, they're young. Some of them are young.
Some of them are extremely young, and it's their first experience. They come to the piano and they'll have a they'll experiment, and maybe some of these up here, and maybe some of these down here, and they'll start to put things together, like in cooking. I wonder if this goes with that. Now we try some of the black ones. Okay.
Do you explain to them this like idea of like what a simple carb music would be and a complex carb piece of music would be?
Well, a 5-year-old might have difficulty with that, but I you know what? I'm actually sitting there watching them trying to learn myself. Trying to learn because you know, you spend your life really trying to develop your technique at something. And the more you do that, paradoxically, you lose the initial innocent spark that you had when you first started and you didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're constantly with this trying to balance those two seemingly opposing forces, right? And so when I have a first timer, little 5-year-old, that gets to the piano the first time, and I show them, I might show them where C is, all right, or I might show, or I just say, just, you know, try some of these. Okay, now put all your fingers on it. You know, you start just little basic physical things instead of just doing one finger, but try all 5 fingers. Okay, see what that, and then you see how they, what do these ones do over here? Oh, and then the element of play comes in. They call it playing music, right? I would imagine that if you're a foodie and you want to come up with your own recipe or your own take another recipe, it's that same form of play. It's like,
sure.
I wonder, yeah, what if I did put, you know, tamarind in this, you know, or whatever, you know.
But what's your thought on, you know, since everything seems so subjective also, you mm-hmm. know, like everyone has their own taste,
mm-hmm.
like when it comes to music and when it comes to food, like how do you come across something, or how do you create something that can be generally liked? What's the constant or the common thread there?
Wow, that's a great. Wouldn't we all like to create something that would be generally liked?
Yeah, what's the pop music?
If I had a dollar,
aside from French fries,
if I had a dollar for everybody liking something that I create, right? You know, I guess there's an art in knowing your audience, and I heard somebody once say this was talking about marketing, and he said my biggest marketing mistake was I gave them what they needed instead of what they wanted.
Hmm.
And you have to sort of meet people halfway. You know, you could be like, you know, hey, isn't this great? It's real sophisticated. No, trust me, it's beautiful. And then people will be like, okay, thank
That's
you
like
very much.
That's like every meal that was shoved in my face.
And then there's, you know, and then there's something in between, you know, and it's finding exactly the balance between those two extremes. And it's going to be different for everybody. And if you're going to try to reach a big audience, you have to, it's almost impossible. Everybody has different tastes, but that's your job. You got to find that.
You said the word I was going to bring up, taste, that, you know, between music and food, it's so much also about taste.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean just the taste and preference. I mean, like the actual taste, like how my ears, you know, receive what you're playing, how my taste buds receive what you're putting in my face.
It's really an awesome comparison between the two. And it does nourish us. It does nourish us. And they go hand in hand. They really do.
Where can people find out more about the work you do in music, websites and so on?
Well, you can go to my company's website, which is Whole Music LLC. Whole, like whole wheat. Whole music, the whole experience. The experience involving the person, the whole person. And you can find out all about me there, wholemusicllc.com.
And you focus on whole, as in the holistic sense. And why is that?
Well, because music doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, it's, to me, a lot of times I see music being taught sort of top down. You know, this is what you have to do, and you know, you must practice, and you must this, and you must that, and there's an element of truth to that. But if you really focus on that method, you're going to end up just being able to do this. Okay, thank you. Now I'm going to quit because it really doesn't hit you where you need it. And part of what I try to do in my approach is I try to really see who my audience is and what their goals are, what they like, and then I sneak in what they need. Because, you know, you don't want to reinvent the wheel. There's a certain way to teach things. But
again, it's like I just hear the similarities between constructing music and an audience for an audience and constructing food for people to eat.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
And one more time, your website before we close?
WholeMusicLLC.com.
This is Isaac Raz. And this is Cynthia Cherish Mallorin. You've been listening to Primary Food. Please come back for more.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.